question about the Eightfold Path, it sort of Patimagga, the eight factors arise. But before that, with the development of Satipatthana, five or six arise. I know I've asked this before about livelihood, but I'm still not quite clear on right livelihood. That never arises until Sota Patimagga, is that correct?
You mean all three together or just one at a time?
When you say all three, that's action, speech and livelihood. No, they're the three that do. No, just right livelihood. Any time before.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay. Well, that answers it, because I was trying to explain to Jill it only arises at Sota Patimagga, but it can arise before.
Has to, because otherwise how can it accumulate?
Of course. That makes sense.
Thank you. Right, understand
okay.
It.
Okay. I had misunderstood before, yeah, accumulations.
It's actually hard for me. I just accept it because that's what's said about it. But it's hard to see what how right livelihood is different from just a moment of restraint. That's not to do with livelihood.
And do you accept pasa now?
Pasa makes sense.
What about it?
But this one seems to be hard to imagine. What's a moment of sila under other conditions and when it's to do with livelihood?
But who can know the shade of the abstention from ill deeds, whether it concerns life or not?
I can't. Not even conceptually.
No, I can't.
Whether it concerns life or livelihood?
Life and livelihood. Without life, can there be livelihood?
So are you referring to life in the sense of just daily living? So livelihood refers to any sense of daily living.
Depending on the moment.
It's very subtle.
Let's talk about something like you don't like this kind of food at all, but you have to have it in order to live. And you can think from this point to other point. Mm-hmm. Can it be right livelihood?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that we need to think about it. Because
it takes quite a long
time, mm-hmm. Again and again.
Mm-hmm. More and more subtle. But on that example, you don't like the medicine, but you have to take it. But there's nothing kusala about
that.
And
in the opposite way, when it's kusala.
Yes.
Okay.
I see, that would be the example of akusala. Yeah. So when it's the opposite, it's kusala.
What would the example of the opposite be?
Then it's not an aspect of restraint, though, is it?
Can you give an example of the opposite of that?
Sometimes you have to think over it by yourself. And when time comes, you know, directly. Because no matter we talk about the eight types of lobha mula citta or eight types of kama vajra kusala citta, it's not the moment of directly experience it. So it's just the idea and thinking. It's not as clear. It's like when we read about the simile in the commentary or sutta.
May or may not be helpful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I understand that right livelihood is actually the same as right speech or action, but in the course of one's living, so it's actually right speech or right action, but just particular kinds of.
Can I just ask why, if you took something that was beneficial for your health, even though you didn't like it, why that would be akusala? Why would that have to be akusala?
Isn't it just attachment?
Is it akusala then?
where is the dana, sila, or bhavana in it?
Are you talking about the moment of taking? Or which moment are you talking about?
Deciding that you need it.
Deciding. The moment of deciding.
That you need it. When you want it.
So usually when you take the medicine, it's just with attachment. But if at that moment there's right understanding of reality, at that moment, then it would be right livelihood with right understanding.
Did you even mention, I thought you mentioned taking food. Or was it?
Anything you didn't like.
Anything you don't like.
What about knowing the proper conditions for sabaya sampajanya? Can that be an aspect? That can it be kusala in that respect?
You talk just about sabaya or right sabaya for kusala.
I'm not sure if I understand the difference really, but if one understands the value of having the proper conditions in this life for further development of understanding, and hearing the teaching.
Is there panya at the moment to understand reality? Or just to live?
There could not necessarily be understanding reality, but there's appreciation of the appropriate conditions for continuing to develop understanding.
Or to live first?
Well, that includes living, of course. Yeah. It may just be attachment, but I'm just wondering if it could be.
That's
there could be moments of kusala there too.
Without the understanding realities as Dhamma, it's impossible to know whether that moment is kusala or akusala, whether there is right livelihood or not.
I've come in a bit late, I'm sorry. But you said so many times, Ajahn, that it's hard to know at the moment if it's kusala or akusala. This is practically the most difficult thing that we have in front of us. But when one on the conventional level occasionally takes steps to prolong life, and other moments takes just things that surely are going to shorten one's life, is there any, in the conventional reality, any point to doing anything about preserving life? But since we can't know it at that moment when you take the pill, if it's wholesome.
Do we have to eat every day?
Not really.
To live,
it's mostly desire, I think, that keeps me.
Do we have to?
Yes.
Is that right understanding? Is that panya? Or just the understanding of what is sapaya, that's all? And what is sapaya for panya? If there is no understanding, it's impossible. So the word sapaya can be general, meaning not panya at all.
Not panya, but still arising by conditions.
When it's panya, which knows.
And in the meantime,
right now,
is it useful to develop more attention to taking care of the body?
What is panya right now? Right now?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty far away, I think.
Understanding from hearing, right consideration, right considering. Is sapaya for panya? Actually, the three characteristics is sapaya for panya. Sound, arising, falling away, thinking. Everything which is conditioned to arise just appear very shortly. That is sapaya for panya, to know.
But Chan, you always forget that we understand only when it arises. And we imagine what if all the time. And when it arises, it arises. When, whatever the reality, that's the time to understand it. I mean, it's quite unlikely that there will be a situation in which you'll have to decide whether or not to eat.
Yes, but one can decide about other things regarding oneself. Yeah. And even there are moments of trying to decide whether to eat,
and
because
whatever,
we need a lot less.
Whatever, there's no control. At that time, whatever.
It's conditioned. I'm sort of feel like suddenly I want to take the position of our dear monk from yesterday. and the day before, of his earnestness. What can I do that's correct? My voice is loud. I don't know what abhaya is. Sapaya.
What is suitable? Sapaya, what is suitable? So there's the ordinary meaning of what is.
What is suitable?
What about if we don't mind about sapaya and anything, but just developing the understanding of reality right now?
And Nina, I'm not saying that because I don't do the same. It's because I do the same thing all day.
I find myself often very careless about this body, and not feeling important. It's so important to know a moment of kusala as opposed to akusala. But in the meantime, since that's coming along rather slowly, it's like, how long I keep this body going so there's more opportunity in the future, perhaps, for moments of banya through rest.
But that's what I'm saying. That may not arise. Yeah. That may not ever be the issue. The issue is just to feel better.
Is that all it is? That's what I'm asking.
For us, we're talking about what it might be. We're talking sort of like trying to give more justification to what we do anyway. We will find a way. We go to the doctor. We'll buy medicine. We'll get a massage. We'll do everything. And so that's what we do, and that's what we understand, whatever arises.
And how long will one live? See, do we have to concern about tomorrow, next year? It can be just as short as right now.
Well, the three verities are the moments of abstaining, so usually when one takes care of one's body or eats the food one doesn't like for oneself, it's usually with attachment, but the opposite would be the moment of abstention from attachment or any moments of right understanding or kusala when instead of attachment arising at that moment.
No body can stop attachment at all. Or nobody can stop detachment. But when it does not arise, should we think about it or understand reality right now? And right understanding can see more, not just what you're talking about. Is it difficult to know breath?
Well, I do a lot of yoga breathing and I think I know breath.
But it's you who knows. Mm-hmm. And you call it breath?
I call it breath.
Even it's soft or hard or hot or cold, it's what you call breath?
It's something.
Yeah, something. Well, it's happening here.
It's not the understanding with detachment from clinging to it as something's there. But in reality, can breath be object of right understanding?
Yes,
not at will. So it depends on conditions. Yes. No expectation for what would be the object of my understanding or the developed right understanding.
And when heat is known here, it's the same as heat anywhere.
Well, the logical conclusion of that is that there's no difference between knowing heat, that's part of what we take for breath, and knowing heat, that's other than that.
The reality of breath, you mean?
No, the reality of heat.
Yeah, so what's the question?
If it's just the reality of heat, then it's just the reality of heat.
Right. It's not breath.
So it's nothing to do with breath.
Is that right, Ajahn?
But is it breath?
Is it breath? It is what we take for breath, yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. Because it's not what we call it, but it's it, different from tangible object here.
Is it?
Why not? It's not conditioned by citta.
Oh, that breath. That's what I'm saying.
This breath.
So, would the heat that we take for breath, be if knowing that he will, you know it as breath also?
It's the...
She's talking in riddles herself. Make sure no one falls asleep.
Just the element of heat.
Yeah, I mean, is that... do we know the heat that's conditioned by chitta different from the heat conditioned by...
Don't you know right now?
The breath? No.
But you know, when we are talking about breath.
Yes, but I don't know it as an element.
So when one comes to understand breath as element, mm-hmm. one knows that it's element. And what is element? What we take for breath?
And would that be heat?
Anything.
And
cold.
And I will know at the same time that the...
Not at the same time, because at that moment it's only the true nature of that element
of heat.
Appear.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the right understanding of breath is the understanding that is only element.
The reality.
That
breath
keeps life.
Just a reality.
That can
a reality.
But normally we don't feel real.
So an element that is conditioned by citta.
But we don't have to think about that because we used to know what is there.
But you were just saying earlier that you know that it's different from the heat here. And what would that imply?
Usually when one thinks about breath, what does one know about it?
What's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
So you mean in the following mind moment when heat is experienced, you know, this is the heat of breath?
Can you stop thinking of what you have learnt before?
Okay. So that moment of thinking will also be with Panya.
Which moment?
After knowing the heat appear, knowing that it's conditioned by breath, different from here.
I see.
One more question on breath. If it is known by Panya, it is known here as element. It's not because, as I said, I do a lot of yoga breathing and it's all through the body, but that's not breath, is it?
It does mean that all your memory is lost. Everything is the same, and what you take for breath is just the reality of breath, which can be directly experienced. That what we take for breath is just that.
But not down in here.
Is that breath?
But well, when I take deep breaths in my lungs, it's that's not breath.
Yes.
No, it's some sort of movement.
Yeah, but it's what we call it
yeah,
breath.
It's what, yeah.
So you call it breath? You call it this, you call it that, but the true nature or the reality of it
will appear when the conditions are on.
Oh, you mean to say without the reality of breath, there wouldn't be this idea of breath. So somewhere there can be knowing the reality of breath.
Can you change breath to other things?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't talk about the reality of breath, though.
Do you mean breath as rupa?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Maybe this is Jonathan's point too. I think it can be quite confusing when we talk about breath as rupa, because actually it's just a composite term for different kinds of rupa, such as hardness and softness appearing through the body sense that we call breath, but actually all that's experienced through the body sense is temperature, hardness, softness, and motion. So together we call it, particular kinds, we call it breath, but breath is actually not a, it's just a concept for combinations of rupas, particular kinds of rupas conditioned by citta.
What do you think, Rob?
About breath?
Yep.
As samatha, it's concept.
As
and?
is vipassana. Breath is conditioned by citta, right? So it could be one of the elements, I guess.
So does it matter if it's conditioned by citta or whatever, since it appears as just these elements?
Well, it must be different from the four elements meditation though, right?
It's a reality. What about the four elements? That's not concept?
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean the four elements are not concept, no.
No, for as object of meditation.
Mm.
About a moments of awareness, there's no idea of location or place or whatever, but if it's harmless appears, it's just the characteristic of harmless that appears. So in what sense is the harmless of breath any different from any other harmless?
Whenever there is touching, what is touched, the tangible object, is coarser than breath, right?
I see, yeah. So it depends on the degree and the nature of that reality is different than.
But anyway, breath is a sort of a distraction for people at this time, isn't it? I mean, breath is one of the difficult subjects of samatha. People try and mix samatha and vipassana when they think about breath usually. Any type of concentration on the breath seems to almost go wrong, really.
There is concentration on breath, but no understanding about it.
Mm. Do you think there's any advantage to people trying to learn?
With ignorance, or what?
Could anyone of this time develop samatha or anapanasati usefully, do you think? If they could understand, if they studied the theory correctly?
Samatha is wholesome, but samatha cannot understand reality as it is.
So can people of this time develop samatha or breath properly? If they understand how to do it? Or can people understand?
If the person understands about breath,
mm-hmm.
how to become calm at moment of having breath as the object,
mm-hmm.
or more attachment?
Well, I would assume mostly more attachment. I think people don't understand that it's first, as Jonathan often points out, it's first develop, understand what kusala is. Samatha is the development of more kusala. People generally take it the other way and just try to concentrate. So the concentration is automatically akusala almost.
Wrong concentration.
Yeah. Anyway, is anapanasati a suitable object for this age?
For whom again?
For the wise person?
Sure.
Even at this time? It can
any time.
But the Visuddhimagga says it's the most difficult object.
Because tangible object is coarse than breath.
Okay, by that then, there could be some wise monks or partially wise monks somewhere. There could be who studied carefully, who could benefit from developing samatha of anapanasati.
Not vipassana.
Vipassana is obviously priority, but there's not always the right conditions for vipassana, so samatha must be easier than vipassana, I assume.
So no way to develop vipassana.
But you said the wise person, so that would have to be someone who understands vipassana.
But satipatthana is something that there's not always the conditions for, whereas there might be the right conditions at times for samatha too, mightn't it?
But didn't you say the wise person?
Yes, but even for the wise person there's not always conditions for satipatthana, right?
Well, if it's not satipatthana, at least it can be seeing the value of understanding the moment.
We encourage, or Nina's books encourage people to develop metta at times and other parami. Why not samatha too? So, I've always thought anapanasati would be unsuitable for people of this time because it's said to be so difficult. But maybe.
Well, the fact that an object may be difficult in the sense that it gets more subtle as higher levels are reached, doesn't mean it's unsuitable.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that it requires a lot more punya for it to be developed to the higher levels.
To the higher levels, okay.
So it could be object. With development of samatha, it's not as though there's just one object.
I always recommend that people don't look at anapanasati. It's sort of, you know, why not the other? If you're going to do samatha, why not contemplate death or metta or learn vipassana directly, right? But is that the right thing to say to people? Or let's put it that way then.
That's what we should be pointing to, I think. Why talk about even development of samatha as in a concentrated way? Why not just talk about kusala in Dilipada?
Ajahn, can we talk about development of samatha in daily life?
What is samatha?
Just any form kusala. Of kusala.
Right now? Yeah. Kusala. Yeah. We don't have to mention samatha.
Right.
Well, a normal person, they wouldn't have kusala about the breath, would they? It just seems an unusual object. That's what I kind of assume about the breath.
And if they go to try to follow that practice, it's going to be even less kusala than normal.
But Ajahn, you were just saying, even now, there can be development of samatha
kusala,
about the breath.
Of kusala.
To do with the breath.
Kusala.
Right? If there's understanding.
If there's no condition for being aware of breath, but there are conditions for being aware of other things.
Yes.
So I think about breath.
Yes. Well, that's
one of had to have heard about it, and why breath can be a condition for kusala, just like one would have to have heard about why the earth or a colour can be a condition for kusala, because there wouldn't be any kusala reflection if one didn't understand at an intellectual level. So if there's, for example, metta in one's day, and metta arises in daily life, that is kusala. Is not necessarily the development of samatha, though, is it?
You call it samatha, but any time kusala arises, it's samatha, it's calm.
But when is it considered development?
More and more.
Just arising more and more?
Yes. With understanding.
With understanding
of that level.
If we hear someone's trying to develop anapanasati, I would normally assume they're probably just trying to concentrate and going wrong, developing more akusala actually. Is that a right assumption, or shouldn't make such an assumption?
Does that person understand anything about samatha? Or just wanting to concentrate on breath?
Well, that seems to be the way it seems to be. But there are obviously monks around the world in Thailand and Burma and so on that study Pali, that know something about what kusala and akusala is, so maybe there are some people who can.
From the book?
From the book, yeah.
I was just thinking of a scenario. You were saying there might be people, probably someone who really had the accumulations, wouldn't even come and talk about it with you now.
Right.
And if he talks about it, probably means he doesn't understand it.
Have you met such people?
That talk about anapanasati?
Are that hundreds? Monks?
Yes. But I've always assumed they're going wrong, the ones I've talked to. Mainly because they seem to emphasize concentration.
No understanding.
People seem to think concentrating is somehow the right way, and that you concentrate very hard and eventually block out all thoughts. And that is when you get to some refined state, but it's completely wrong.
When you say that the rupas of breath are more subtle than the normal tangible objects, but can we not say the normal tangible objects experience some, for example, some softness is very fine and other softness is much stronger? Can't one say there are a lot of variations in the
different... Not as fine as red.
What about blowing?
Not as red.
That's not breath. Mm-hmm. But still, it feels the same.
But not breath. And we'll come to understand what breath means.
As Ita was saying, with, you know, what we understand of breath in yoga or something, most of what we take for breath is not what is actually breath in the Dhamma sense, is what you're saying.
Sure.
Has anyone else got anything to say about else about breath before I move on?
I've done enough breath today.
Peter, any more wise comments on breath?
I'm breathless.
In the Visuddhimagga, often we read comments such as, well, this text is referring to, for example, the six inner ayatanas, or it's just referring to feelings or contact, which are vipaka, for example, in the section on paticchasamuppada. And there's often a comment which says, oh, but other teachers say all 12 ayatanas are implied, or all feelings are implied, or all kinds of contact are implied. Now, my question is, because there are always inner and outer ayatanas, so I don't understand how the outer ayatanas cannot be implied. And like in the section on paticchasamuppada, what you have said to me before is actually all feelings are included, even though it just refers to the vipaka feelings, because there can be attachment to any feeling, not just to vipaka feeling, and so on. So in this commentary, why does it say, oh, well, these teachers say it's just referring to the inner ayatanas, or just referring to this, but other teachers say, oh, other, all 12 are included, or all feelings, or all contact? How do I understand that?
Depending on different people, different ideas.
But if, according to the Abhidharma, only one meaning is correct, for example, in the teaching of paticchasamuppada, what you said to me before is, oh, even though it just mentions vipaka feelings, actually all feelings are included, because there can be attachment to any feelings. So we have to read that these are just representative or examples. So why would it say in the commentaries, some say this and some say that? Surely only one interpretation is correct.
Can we say everything?
Well, I would have thought we could say some things, like when you said...
Sometimes.
Like when you said to me, oh, all feelings are actually... there, that seems correct. So why would it say, oh, well, some teachers say this, some teachers say the opposite? Don't we know this is
correct? I think that no matter how many teachers say, it depends on one's consideration. In order to really understand realities, not just to have doubt, but really to understand, it's not by the word or under the subject of paticchasamuppada or anything, but do we understand what is said, like feeling? If we have the understanding of feeling as much, no doubt about feeling under paticchasamuppada or the three kinds of dukkha.
Oh, back here to ayatana, for example, we know there cannot be external ayatana, there cannot be visible object without eye base, there cannot be chetasikas without chitas. So how could it be, this seems a fairly straightforward example to me, how could some teachers say, enough to say to be quoted in the commentary, how could some teachers say, oh, only inner ayatanas are referred to, because there cannot be inner ayatanas without outer ayatanas, for example.
If one says jaku, doesn't it mean also the object of seeing?
I would have said so.
So that's enough.
That's it, enough. So instead of saying, oh, some teachers say this, some teachers say that.
It doesn't matter at all.
Mm-hmm. It has to be implied, I would think.
But sometimes when they say some, it's kichi, right? And he's sort of saying they're wrong. Isn't he? But it goes to...
I see, perhaps.
In some of those cases, I think.
Right.
It's referring to kichi, which is others that are the wrong ones or something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, not always.
Okay, that might be a good point.
There's usually a footnote, isn't there, that explains that sort of thing.
Usually, but I was just wondering, it might be in this case. Right. I don't know in this case, yeah.
For example, here it says, this is under the ayatanas at the beginning of chapter 17. Thus far, the inner ayatanas were referred to, namely the five senses and the mind-based manayatana. In the following sections, it is said that some teachers take it that the sixfold ayatana includes also the external ayatanas.
Oh, that doesn't sound like kichi then.
No.
Some teachers only.
This is repeated quite often, I notice.
Who's kichi?
Kichi, it just means others in a
derogatory way.
In a day, we may reflect on discussions we've had, Dhamma discussions and so forth, which I guess is possibly kusala, not necessarily, but there must be some kusala movements there. Then that's also can be generally called samatha if it's kusala, as you say. And if there's.
Is it calm when it's kusala?
We believe that if it's not calm, it's not kusala.
When it's kusala, is it calm? Or not calm?
When it's kusala, it should be calm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do we have to use the Pali term samatha?
No. On the other hand, if someone asks what is, for example, dhammanusati, then it seems to me that what is really meant by dhammanusati is just reflecting on the teachings, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a particular practice of doing that, no. Can you say anything about the quality of calmness, kusala calmness?
Lobha dosa moha. And other kusala chetasikas.
So on this general topic of samatha, in a day there's not much opportunity or not many conditions. There's always opportunity, not many conditions for satipatthana or direct awareness of the present moment necessarily.
Why?
Don't know.
Not enough understanding of reality right now. For example, visible object or object of seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's satipatthana. But is there enough understanding of the object of seeing right now so that sati will arise and be aware of it?
Is that the only lack?
Mm-hmm.
The understanding is not enough at the level of satcha?
Uh-huh.
Oh. If there was enough understanding at that level, satipatthana would arise often?
When satipatthana arises, it must have conditions which must be right understanding of that object too, as Dhamma.
Okay, well that's encouraging.
When it's been developed sufficiently, it arises more often.
With more understanding, or by more understanding.
So, for the one with good understanding, satipatthana can and should arise quite often.
By conditions.
By conditions, yeah.
Without expectation to have more.
So what is satcha jnana?
Satcha.
Satcha is truth. So...
intellectual understanding, firmly. In Thai, translated from Pali, I don't know the Pali word. Ta. Yeah, like the dog. What's inside the bone?
Marrow
goes to the bone. Mm.
Goes to
the
marrow.
Understanding goes through
goes
that.
Through to the bone.
No change. This is satyana. Intellectual satyana.
What about the case of someone who might have good understanding, but they also have so many akusala, latent akusala, like lopa and dosa, that lopa and dosa might take them on the wrong way, even though they have accumulated such a jnana too?
But jnana is there, so it can arise and understand that moment.
Well, I find that encouraging to hear, actually.
Function of jnana, leave it to jnana.
Yeah.
from not knowing anything until it can penetrate the true nature of reality right now.
So you would keep stressing about Satipatthana rather than being diverted into
understanding.
Rather than being diverted by samatha and trying to develop samatha to high levels.
I think that if one forgets about samatha and vipassana, it's the best way. Just understand more and more.
Forget about samatha vipassana, that's easy.
But what about right understanding?
Oh, all right, yeah.
Back to that satchanyana, what do you mean by to the bone? Can you explain a little more about
it's so
that?
Deeply rooted.
Okay, it's not like
goes
the down
the skin to the flesh and blood.
Bone deep.
Okay,
we should avoid the path in the intellectual sense.
But doubt hasn't been eradicated, but there's deep belief.
Understanding.
So what we call sati and sata and everything are there when there's more and more understanding.
Because otherwise, if there's an idea, if one says, oh, well, this is right understanding about realities, but how about also trying to follow samatha? Isn't it like trying to introduce a self back into the equation? Isn't it saying, well, yes, these are conditioned dhammas, but how about self trying to do something rather than just accepting or understanding what is real now and understanding what kusala is and akusala is?
That's true, of course, but also, I mean, most of our daily life is involved in self-promoting activities anyway, in a sense, aren't they? At least samatha is a level of kusala.
But when one has the idea of trying to have samatha, is there any samatha involved? Or isn't that just encouraging the clinging to self, the idea of self who can do something?
Just talking about the person who's trying to develop samatha, leaving aside understanding of present moment. If they didn't have some motivation or see some benefit in trying to do it, then they'd never try to do anything.
But at the moments of trying to have samatha or trying to have kusala, there's not going to be any kusala involved in those moments at all. That's not going to be samatha. Because samatha means kusala, or calm with kusala, that is, arises by conditions. Any moments of trying or wanting to have it is attachment.
Well,
or often with wrong view that thinks that a self can have it by trying.
Generally, yes, but there is chanda too. I mean, there has to be chanda.
But what is chanda?
That is some level of wanting, desire to do something, isn't it?
It's not wanting or desire, it's interest, wholesome interest, when it's kusala chanda.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit semantic, though, wholesome interest.
But it's not desire of any kind. Like, if there's an interest in reflecting on Dharma now, that's different from desire, like, I'm going to read to have more calm. So it's an interest that arises by conditions, self trying to have it by, okay, let's read so that there's more kusala.
But I'm assuming someone who wanted to develop samatha could have that type of interest too, can't they? Or are you?
But naturally by conditions, not by wanting to have it. The one who develops samatha is the one who understands what kusala is and for whom kusala arises naturally, like when there is metta. It's not because we want to have metta so that we can sleep peacefully at night or because we know it's calm, but by appreciating the value of metta arises, not trying to have it.
It seems to me as soon as you talk about someone wanting to develop X, whatever it is, that that's something different from a person who has an interest in X or has accumulations for that or understands the benefit of that.
Mm-hmm. And Natan just said that it's best not to think about some of the and vipassana.
Yeah.
Right. When we hear samatha or vipassana, we want it.
So any of the wanting or trying to have it is not calm or kusala of any kind.
And I think it can lead to sila bhakta prajna.
Sure. Because the trying to have it or the idea that by reading this or by
practicing
it, there will be calm of some kind. It's not samatha at all.
And what's the enemy of karma?
Loka. But chanda is an ally.
Chanda is not lopa. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be very useful to be able to tell the difference between kusala and akusala?
Just to be told? Or
understand? No, to understand the difference.
To know the characteristic of reality as not self.
But wouldn't it be useful to know when kusala was present
thinking.
And when akusala was present?
It's only thinking about it because it arises and falls away in split seconds.
Right,
just trying to decide whether it's kusala or akusala, not the understanding any reality as just no self at all.
But even at the thinking level, there can be some.
But it's not direct understanding. Mm-hmm. It's only assuming.
It could be.
Like at this moment,
mm-hmm.
kusala or akusala.
That's what I.
If you say kusala,
but if sometimes it happens without trying.
If you say kusala. What about whispered object, saying and then what? Kusala or what?
No, I'm talking about everyday sense of
everything.
Right and wrong.
Yes, it's only thinking, assuming.
But is it useful?
For what?
To
think about?
To
recognize,
right, have at least distinguish.
Recognize what?
To some degree, loka and dosa,
my kusala, my loka.
Yeah. It will be, yes.
My
but better than nothing.
My understanding. My understanding.
Better than not even that.
But it's. Is it?
I don't know.
I don't think it's. No.
That's why just understanding theoretically is not enough. One should know that should develop more. Otherwise, there must be doubt about reality.
Mm.
So, Ajahn, the theoretical understanding, intellectual understanding, is really just hearsay. It's just what you heard. Until it is augmented by direct penetration of mind.
And without that, there can be no conditions for right awareness to arise at all.
Yeah, without the second.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's even what happens in daily life spontaneously when we think that what is arising is akusala, it's best that we understand that it's just a conditioned reality without and not taking it so seriously that we make a right estimation of the whatever arose.
For example, when we use the term dhamma, is that enough?
No.
Or there are different kinds of Dhamma, different realities appearing even right now. What are they? One characteristic appears without understanding or developing by hearing and understanding. At that moment, it's the beginning of understanding the characteristic of Dhamma, not just the term or the word Dhamma or the concept of Dhamma.
So we could say that there's not enough appreciation of the danger of ignorance during those moments when we think that we know akusala.
Hearing is very, very little, not firm enough.
others who we develop.
More understanding. That's why the Eightfold Path begin with right understanding.
I think you're meaning here to see more and more the shame in the more and more subtle aspects of akusala. So even, for example, if we talk about developing metta, as soon as there's an idea of having more metta, actually the attachment is there, or reflecting more on death, or I think the attachment comes in straight away as soon as there's any aim or purpose, because it's so different from appreciating more what the quality of metta is and metta developing naturally in a day.
Is metta I or self or someone? So in order to understand metta, there must be the understanding of the reality of Dhamma.
It seems like that until there is right understanding, we will never know whether this moment is lopa, even though we might say, oh, it feels like lopa. We never know, really.
Just
call it lopa.
Right.
Or hiri, or seeing.
It's an assumption.
It is an assumption, isn't it? Until this appears that it's only right understanding that really knows.
That kind of thinking has no real use then.
When it's right thinking, it conditions better understanding too. The vitata and the panya.
What kind of thinking? What I just see?
Yeah. We're thinking about whether it's kusala or akusala.
Or just thinking before there is speech.
Yes, that can be useful. But thinking about whether this is kusala or akusala.
The same. Thinking is thinking.
Maybe right thinking or wrong thinking.
Who's right thinking? Who's wrong thinking? When there's no understanding of thinking.
And that happens in the moment, and there's so many realities arising and falling away. Why think so much about that? That's where satyayana comes in. Then you know what you're missing.
The reality is so close, but right understanding is so far.
I mean, some people have the idea that they should think about their mind states to try to work out whether it's kusala or akusala, and that can be a kind of sila bhata paramasa too.
Yes,
trying to
and it doesn't have to be them. We take in a day so much for granted when we think that, like Acharan was saying, before speaking to anyone or doing anything, breaking the precepts, we actually dwell on those moments a little bit and judge it as kusala or whatever, even if it's not a long story, but we think that it's kusala, and we've met, there was a moment to see that when we don't know.
It might just be mana. Don't look at the
mind. I mean, in any case, there's no understanding.
But I think that's very normal and natural, and even then understanding can slip in and out, and if one has an idea, there shouldn't be that kind of normal, conventional reflection that would be wrong.
Yes.
And panya will see lopa more when you want more. you want to understand more. Is visible object not enough to understand?
Well, it is, because it's there.
It's there.
It's almost always there. I like what you said before about the realities are near, but the panya is far away.
What is it? The panya, see? when avijja arises, there is no panya.
When you say, is visible object now not enough? Well, of course, at a moment when visible object appears, if there's understanding of visible object, it's enough. But of course, there has to be understanding of many different realities. So in that sense, it's not enough just to be aware of one reality only appearing.
Is visible object now not enough to develop understanding of it? You want to know more than this? And we can say that not enough because there are also other realities.
Would that be Panya saying that? Well, you said visible object is not enough because there are other realities arising. So in one way that's completely true.
All realities, not just one.
Because we have, well, Panya has to know
now what appears.
No, it is now. Yeah. It's not just visible object arising.
That's
what it. I have to turn when visible objects and at that time understand that it arises and falls. Does it enough? Is it enough for Satipatthana to arise?
What is Satipatthana?
Is understanding the realities with Pandya, with ourselves.
Right understanding is understanding sati is sati. Awareness with panya is satipatthana of an object one at a time.
So maybe sati arises before at a time of understanding.
At this very moment.
As the very moment of visible, of seeing visible object.
At this very moment, you are thinking about what? Not awareness of that which sees.
But if understanding of your disease arises with some realities, for example, visible objects or sounds, and understanding that is only reality that arises and falls. So at that moment, is only state, not satipatthana.
You call it sati. You call it not satipatthana. But what about the understanding of what you said?
Understanding that that reality arises
which
and falls.
Which one?
Visible object.
Okay, now visible object arises and falls away all the time. So what?
All the time, at that moment, and after that...
No, at this moment, visible object arises and falls away all the time in succession, and there is also sound and thinking, feeling, many realities.
When you say understanding that visible object arises and falls away, wouldn't that be thinking about it? Why is it understanding rather than just thinking?
So it means that only thinking that arises always arises.
I think he's asking what would differentiate. How would you tell the difference between satipatthana and the understanding that arises with satipatthana and just the rising visible object?
Or thinking.
I have a couple of questions about accumulations, karma, and storehouse. Now, we know that jitters arise and fall away, and that
what we refer to as accumulations actually refer to moments of lobha dosa, other tendencies at each moment which arise and fall away of the citta, but when they arise they accumulate at those moments, but nothing is actually carried over from citta to citta. So the first question is the word accumulation. Can we just say this is just a concept in effect, because nothing actually accumulates over from citta to citta? It's actually just referring to the qualities arising at each moment and the latent tendencies of the cheetahs. Can we pin down exactly what is meant by accumulations in that sense?
How come this understanding today and 10 years ago?
Because of many moments of understanding that arose with past cheetahs, which by natural decisive support and other conditions condition understanding to rise with the citta at this moment. But actually when we refer to the accumulation, the understanding from 10 years ago completely fell away, but it has a conditioning effect on the understanding arising today. But it's not as though anything was ever accumulated or carried over in the citta.
So it doesn't matter what word you use?
Doesn't matter what word. And the other thing is, you know, because often people from other traditions talk about stores and storehouses, and we always say, well, actually, there's no store or storehouse, nothing, because what arises completely falls away. And yes, there is the latent tendencies which are, in effect, carried in each citta, or but when even when we say carried, actually nothing is carried over, because each citta, not like rupa, but even rupa we can't say anything is carried from rupa to rupa, because each rupa rises and falls away. But what do you mean when you say not like rupa?
Can you carry a book?
So nothing is carried except in that sense.
In the sense of nama, there is in a certain carrying over that does not occur in the case of rupa.
Well, is anything actually carried over? Because isn't that just a way of speaking? Because one citta falls away completely, nothing actually is carried from one citta to another citta. This citta, what arises with this citta and the tendency with this citta is just conditioned from the previous ones. It's not actually carried over, is it?
It's conditioned not just by the previous citta, though, is it?
Or once 10 years ago.
No hands.
No hands.
No hands.
No hands.
So can we refer to anything carried over?
It depends on whether this citta is conditioned by the previous one
or not, you know, or how it's conditioned. And also, I've always said to people, no, no store, no storehouse, and then I came across in a text a reference to store and storehouse. I haven't got it with me, but in what sense can we talk about storehouse?
It's there, not at the other place.
What do you mean it's there?
In that particular citta from moment
to
moment.
Oh, in that particular moment. Sometimes the texts refer to the force of conditions. So, for example, at moments of karma, there is a force which can condition future results or something like this. And there was a discussion about whether past karma is thereby a concept or whether it's still can be referred to as present karma.
Can we just use the word prajna?
Prajna, yes. Instead of force. But the text referred to the force of prajna.
The text tried to explain
the nature of prajna. So it's just an aspect of the nature of prajna. And if we're referring to
karma that has passed that has brings its result now, that karma is gone. So actually, it's just a past reality, you would say.
Its quality is that it can condition vipaka.
And that's what's meant by force.
Getting back to calm again, when we talk about the calm of samatha, we're talking about quality of citta, right? The citta is calm.
And jetasika.
So it's nothing to do with calm in the conventional sense of feeling calm, is it?
You mean pleasant feeling?
Yeah, I mean pleasant or neutral feeling.
When it's calm, is indifferent feeling or pleasant feeling?
When what's calm?
Feeling calm.
Feeling calm is probably pleasant feeling.
Isn't it a reference to prasati, the calm?
I believe so.
Or loba?
Or loba, yeah. Prasati.
The calm of kusala is the reference to prasati.
Right.
But if we're talking about recognizing that, we shouldn't be thinking in terms of the calm, of feeling calm, which is probably pleasant feeling. So.
Because I think that we use the word and represent that which we do not understand.
And likewise with restlessness of akusala citta. Mm-hmm. Again, it's nothing to do with feeling restless. So it's a quality of citta.
Jetasika.
Could you conventionally feel restless and be having kusala? I think conventionally, if you were feeling restless, it would also be a kusala. Even conventionally, if you're feeling.
But you could feel conventional calm and.
Oh, that's different, because conventional calm is also comes with pleasant feeling.
There could be different kinds of jitters arising intermittently. There could be restlessness predominating, but there could also be consideration for another person at the same time.
Sati slipping in and out.
And what about you think that it's calm, but actually it's restlessness?
I think you could be quite agitated, but there could still be some level of kusala arising, unrelated to the cause of the agitation.
Mm-hmm.
You could be very late for a meeting, but you could still help someone on the way or whatever, I don't know.
Well, I just meant over a few seconds. I mean, when you feel agitated.
2 seconds is very long.
How many mind-door processes in that time?
I think the point I was getting at was really that to think in terms of calm and restless as we normally do, if we're interested in learning more about the quality of kusala and akusala, is the wrong ballpark, as it were, because the calm and restlessness that is the signature of kusala and kusala citta is talking about an aspect of jetasika and nothing to do with the calm and restlessness that we feel, is what we normally think of.
I think the point is whatever we think of, whatever conditions that thinking, it's actually a reality manifesting and we have no understanding of it anyway. That's why Ajahn always points to the need to understand,
mm-hmm.
then to pinpoint or try to identify.
Right.
Rupas of the body are the conditioned or maintained by gamma, citta,
ahara
and tejo, is it? After death, it's still rupa, it's still rupas. So what maintains the
death?
Tejo and not that's the only thing, okay.
Yeah. Like the rupas of a log.
Right,
or the rupas of the table.
Yes, I was thinking about. And gamma pachaya, that's gamma conditions vibhaga, that's gamma pachaya.
Coming back to accumulations,
could you say that habits of thinking are accumulated from one citta to the next,
mm-hmm.
from one life to the next?
Mm-hmm.
each moment is conditioned. Like seeing now is conditioned by karma, but we cannot tell which karma of which life, of which eon.
What sort of habits of thinking do you have in mind?
Well, taking the instance that I found just right, visible object arises, and our habits of, for example, converting them into beings, objects of one kind or another, and having a string of related emotional responses to those concepts or the constructs around things. I mean, that obviously keeps us away from seeing nama and rupa arise and fall away utterly. We fool ourselves in a way through our thinking, or we create our world through our thinking by not recognizing the moments for what they really are, not seeing them at all.
In terms of pajjaya, habits is pakatupanisiya pajjaya.
That's the thing. And the only way for that to break down is for
each moment.
Thinking doesn't get us out of that.
But the enlightened person still conceptualizes.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, it can't be just the conceptualizing that keeps us away from.
So, would be the other chetasikas arising with the conceptualization?
We're just discussing the difference between the conceptualizing of the unenlightened person and the conceptualizing of the enlightened person. Because they both conceptualize, they both see people and things. So what is the difference then?
Accumulation, patupanisiyapachya, condition, even thinking, different thoughts. Mokalana thoughts and Sariputta thoughts are different by conditions. Or even from moment to moment, different thinking.
But the enlightened person has no wrong view about things.
Not even the latent tendency. Not even the
latent tendency.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference.
Mm.
We were discussing this morning, I think before you were here, how one's latent tendencies can influence thinking, even though they remain latent tendencies.
On your question, Nasita, about karmapachya, and you said something about, oh, it brings results, but actually under karmapachya it's a little bit broader. It doesn't just refer to
karma
which brings results, right? There's also, it refers to the chetana which arises with each chitta conditioning the chitta and other chitta.
The next chitta is
the associated, the coordinating the other chitta seekers,
oh, okay,
and chitta, so
okay,
the two.
Two
different functions,
of
yeah. And then the chetana and the javana processes has that two functions, one of coordinating and one which can, if it's strong enough, bring about results.
Okay.
So it's a bit broader than
that. So, Ajahn, the Putujana's thinking and conceptualizing is conditioned by accumulated wrong view. Can we say that?
Wrong view arises.
Well, even when it doesn't, because it has a latent tendency.
As the latent tendency is not completely eradicated.
Latent, yes. So that means their patterns of thinking will be different to those of the enlightened.
Turn on the radio and listen. You see different ideas, different concepts.
What about
radio?
This radio?
Read anything?
How about awareness of thinking? You know, we talk about awareness of visible object. Awareness of thinking should be important too.
We pay attention to sati. Why not panya?
Mm.
Because whenever there is panya, there must be sati. It's like this moment, seeing. When there is the understanding develops of that which sees now, it's real. It doesn't have any shape, but it performs the function of seeing right now, the same as thinking, which does not perform the function of seeing. But that which thinks.
You said something about our latent tendencies are what makes us think in a certain way.
or as some
can
of the
can.
Well, what else would, if it's not latent tendencies?
To wrong view, to think in a particular way, as against an Aryan would not think in those ways.
But it's not, I understand that, but it's the can bit. I can't, it can or may or may not. If it's may not, what else would it be? If it's, do you know what
right
I mean?
Thinking, well, moment of reflection, yes, right thinking, so for that moment is different.
But that could be a latent tendency anyway, to think that way.
Well, it could be a latent tendency of Anya.
Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah. The way I understand it, and I'm not real sure on this, but when we say latent tendency, we're talking about tendencies that are not manifesting at the moment.
Yes.
So even though the thinking may be without wrong view, but it's still influenced by the latent wrong view, so that the sanya, for example, sanya that marks things, because there's been so much sanya arising with wrong view and accumulated as such, that it somehow affects the way that things are perceived now, even though wrong view not actually arising.
But sometimes, but how do you explain that when many tendencies that are latent do not arise in this life, say, but they may have arose in a previous life? You know, we have a lot of latent tendencies that never make any showing in this particular life, but they may have made a showing, in, whatever you want to call it, a showing in a previous life. So how do you explain
what
that?
What would be an example?
Oh, I don't know. In a previous life, let's say something really startling. Somebody had a tendency toward killing someone, but in this life, that tendency does not show up at all.
Right. Because no combination of circumstances.
Well, there's no conditions for it in this particular life, but maybe in another past life there were conditions for that tendency to arise, but it's still latent somewhere, you know, in the citta.
Yes.
And latent tendencies are gathering all the time. Like last, accumulating all the time.
Yeah.
Like last week, I may have. That would be accumulated. Anything I'm doing is accumulating. And then it becomes a latent tendency.
The doing, the deed are the jetasikas?
Well, the jetasikas, yeah. The tendency is there to be able to do something.
So could we say, as Betty was trying to distinguish, the latent tendency for merger is after all rooted in dosa. So we can't say that it's any different from the dosa that arises now to its of that degree. So it does arise, just it's not to the degree. Dosa arises.
Of that degree, very easy to kill. Cockroaches, snake, mosquito.
Yeah, that can happen also.